Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. James Brown, the godfather of soul with Say It Loud, an iconic song, first released 50 years ago next month, August 1968.
We've been built and we've been scorned. We've been treated bad, talked about, as sure as you moan. But just as sure as it takes two eyes to make a pair. Brother, we can't quit until we get our share.
The song was released just 4 months after the assassination of Reverend Martin Luther King Jr., and Randall Kennedy says he remembers when he first heard it. The funk and soul-inspired song was like nothing his young ears had ever experienced, especially at a time where, Kennedy says, overt colorism, or the preference for lighter colored skin, was prevalent in the black community. Kennedy writes that, quote, it was precisely because of widespread colorism that James Brown's anthem posed a challenge and resonated so powerfully. Randall Kennedy joins me now. He's a professor at Harvard Law School, and his latest piece for the New York Times is headlined, How James Brown Made Black Pride a Hit. Randall Kennedy, welcome back to Radio Boston.
Thanks so much for having me.
Well, first of all, how did James Brown's song change you or have an effect on you back in 1968?
James Brown's song had a big effect on me. I was in the eighth grade. I was 14 years old. And I remember very clearly, it was an exciting song. And me and my buddies were singing it. And it had an effect, and it has continued to have an effect.
But what was so different about it?
It is one of the landmark cultural texts of the 1960s. When people think about the Black Liberation Movement, the Black Liberation Movement had a variety of fronts. One front was outward facing, challenging white supremacy. The other front, however, and a very important front, was the inner struggle in Black America to rehabilitate itself, reclaim itself. Remember, in the 1960s, the word black itself was, in many precincts, was a bad word. I clearly remember people fighting. You know, you called me black, and then a punch would come.
Huh.
And so when James Brown came out with Say It Loud, I'm Black and I'm Proud, he was issuing a challenge within the black community to the denigration of blackness that existed within the black community.
Well, in your piece, in the Times, you actually write about how in this same time period, or before, just before the song came out, that certain parts of the African-American community were upfront about their preferences for lighter colored skin.
Oh, absolutely. It was quite prevalent in the period before the late 1960s, and you can see it in a variety of ways. If you were taking a look at beauty contests, if you were taking a look at who was elected Miss Howard University, for instance, you could clearly see that lightness was preferred.
Yeah. I mean, in the piece you write about an incident that you had with a friend before the song came out, he tells about that?
Well, a friend, and he remains a friend. We were in gym, and, you know, again, we were in eighth grade, and I asked my buddy, you know, are you interested in a certain girl? And he looked up at me and just as nonchalant said, no, she's too dark. But that changed. That changed. He would not have said that 2 years later.
Wow. Well, let's listen to a little bit more of the song again. This is James Brown. Say It Loud, I'm Black and I'm Proud.
I worked on jobs with my feet in my hand. You know, all the work I did was for the other man. But now we demand a chance to do things for ourselves. We're tired of beating our head against the wall and working with someone else.
You know, Randall Kennedy, there's also just something about the sheer energy of the song.
He's soul brother number one.
Yeah.
The hardest working man in show business. The godfather of soul. And it's there in Say It Loud. Let me say one thing. There were a number of people who, in responding to my piece, said, isn't it a bad thing for anybody to have pride of race? So what does Say It Loud, I'm Black and I'm Proud really mean in the United States of America? It does not mean black people saying we're better than. The reason why James Brown felt that he had to say this is because, of course, for most of American history, blackness has been denigrated. It has been a subject of contempt. It has been a subject of derision. So he felt that he had to say it. That sort of idea has come up with Black Lives Matter as well. People say, why do you say Black Lives Matter? Or is black life any more important than white life? Of course not. All lives matter. All hues are beautiful, except some hues have been systematically put down for decades, if not centuries.
Right. So as you say, the context and the historical story and narrative around it, it's exactly why we're having this conversation. Point well taken. I also want to ask you, along those same lines, though, again, back to the specifics of Say It Loud. Mm-hmm. In the mid and late 60s, there were other iconic songs by black musicians, right?
Yes, sure.
Obviously, Sam Cooke, Sly and the Family Stone had Stand. Mm-hmm. I'm going to play another one, a different one, in just a second here. But what was so strikingly different about Say It Loud? We had other songs from black artists saying, here is being the voice of the struggle of the 60s.
Sure. Curtis Mayfield and the Impressions.
Yeah.
And Nina Simone. Here, I think we have just a matter of aesthetics. What is the song that captures people's imaginations? What is the song that gets you that makes you tap your foot? What's the song that makes you want to shout?
Well, and also there's the interesting question of James Brown himself,
yes,
as a voice for the black community in the 1960s in America, right? The New York Times in its obituary of him said he was never politically predictable.
To the degree to which he was politically predictable, he was politically quite conservative. He lauded Ronald Reagan. He embraced Richard Nixon. He said nice things about Strom Thurmond, but he also had this other feature with him, which was a sort of, and it's a strand of black nationalism. We want to do things for ourselves. It was a strong, assertive autonomy that he represented within the black community.
Was it a risk for him?
It was a risk for him. This is 1968, for goodness sakes.
Well, in terms of James Brown's complex politics, I just want to play quickly another song from him that shows kind of another aspect, mm-hmm, of the Godfather of Soul. This is America Is My Home, from 1967. Recorded in response to what he saw as increasing criticism of the Vietnam War,
yeah,
from black leaders at the, mm-hmm, time. So let's listen.
Now black and white, they may fight. But if the enemy come, we'll get together and run them out of sight. Now look at him. The sun don't come out in rainy weather. But when you boil it down, they are still together.
I think what one thing that people need to remember and keep in mind always is that individuals are complicated. Communities are complicated. Political opinion within black communities ranged widely.
Yeah.
There were people who had all sorts of different views, including radically conflicting views. And, James Brown was part of that, too. That's right. America's My Home, right next to Say It Loud, I'm Black and I'm Proud.
So I want to play one more piece of music and then talk about today. But you mentioned her before in terms of the canon of black musicians from the 1960s that were making incredible songs at the time. And this is just one of my favorite. This is Nina Simone. This is from 1969, June, at Morehouse College, singing To Be Young, Gifted, and Black.
Yes.
Yours is the quest that's just begun. So when you're feeling depressed, alienated, and real low, there's a great truth that you should know.
Simone was very consistently political, or her views were consistent throughout her life. And that we should note that she wrote that song in honor of Lorraine Hansberry, the playwright.
Listen, she was consistently political, very self-conscious about her politics, and at every phase of her career, from my understanding, she married her politics and her artistry.
To her cost at times.
And very much to her cost. Very much to her cost. Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, you stress in your piece in the New York Times that colorism is persistent to this day.
Yes.
Explain that.
Sociologists have shown this. People have done investigations and have shown that people who are darker punished more harshly. Even in terms of hip-hop, who's in the movies or the videos. In the last 2 years, a number of black actresses of various hues have talked about colorism, including, by the way, light-skinned actresses who have said, I recognize that my light skin has actually advantaged me. Mm-hmm. And this is a problem in our society.
Well, I mean, to exactly that point, we have a piece of tape here from a 2014 conversation that actress Lupita Nyong'o had at the Essence, a Black Women in Hollywood event. And this was after she appeared in the film 12 Years a Slave. She received a letter from a little girl who had watched the film. And here's Lupita Nyong'o.
Dear Lupita, it reads, I think you're really lucky to be this black, but yet this successful in Hollywood overnight. I was just about to buy Densha's whitenicious cream to lighten my skin when you appeared on the world map and saved me. My heart bled a little when I read those words. I could never have guessed that my first job out of school would be so powerful in and of itself.
I saw her speech at this Essence celebration. It was extremely moving. Again, in my own life, I clearly remember people putting on various creams to lighten themselves. I clearly remember in the summertime, some of my relatives telling their younger relatives, don't go out in the sun, you'll get too black. Colorism within the black community has been tremendously diminished. But is it still there? Yes. That's why Miss Nyong'o was writing a book for young girls aimed at dark-skinned young girls, basically saying, hey, listen, you know, you're beautiful. If people are writing books to that extent, if people are still saying, say it loud, I'm black and I'm proud, if people, the extent of self-consciousness about this, the extent to which people get worked up about it, the extent to which people are debating this shows that this still remains a force in black American life and therefore in American life.
Well, Randall Kennedy is a professor of law at Harvard University. We've got a link to his New York Times piece, which was headlined, How James Brown Made Black Pride a Hit. That link is at radioboston.org. Professor Kennedy, it's always a pleasure. Thank you so very much.
Be well. Thank you.
Say it loud. Say it loud.
That's it for today. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.